Hey guys, welcome to another Expansive Minds episode. Really glad you made it in. Today's gonna be kind of interesting. Yeah, there's Manny over there. We also have Jess as a guest speaker.
Yeah, that's right. So it's gonna be an interesting day. So like Kev said, we're gonna be talking about optimism, nihilism, the law of attraction, and how those things all intertwine with each other. And so today, when we were thinking about this topic, I really had a guest speaker in mind, and that was a good friend of mine, Jess Murphy. We met in Peace Corps Zambia back in 2016, and we always really had extremely interesting conversations and deep conversations, and usually about philosophy and existentialism and things of that nature. And so, yeah, I really wanted to get her on here. Yeah, Jess, welcome to Expansive Minds. How are you doing today?
Thank you for having me. I'm doing well. I'm excited to be here. I studied philosophy, and I'm just really interested in the topics that we're going to discuss today. I got into learning about the law of attraction years ago, so I'm just excited to talk to both of you.
Awesome. Yeah.
Whereas Manny used to call it the portal.
Yeah, that's right. I did. I used to call it
the vortex,
the portal. So again, Jess, it's super great to have you on. We're just gonna go ahead and dive right into it. So I really just went to Wikipedia. I went to the Internet Encyclopedia of philosophy. For the law of attraction and a few other things, I looked into some research articles on Google Scholar. But so that's generally where this information is coming from. We'll have some sources posted in the show notes, so you can find those. But
yep.
We're working with some pretty basic definitions here. So optimism specifically is an attitude reflecting a belief or hope that the outcome of some specific endeavor or outcomes in general will be positive, favorable, mm-hmm. And desired. So that, that's just the general thing. I had some difficulty with choosing this term because, I was really thinking more along the lines of positivity. But what I discovered as well is this idea of philosophical optimism and how that relates in philosophical pessimism as well, as the antithesis of that. And so to also talk about that, pessimism is the negative mental attitude in which an undesirable outcome is anticipated for a given situation.
Yeah, opposite of optimism.
Right. And philosophical pessimism is a related idea that views the world in a strictly anti-optimistic fashion. And the reason that I brought this up is because philosophical pessimists are often also existential nihilists, believing that life has no intrinsic value. This isn't, one for one at all, but that's kind of where my mind was at when I was thinking about this topic, and that's why I chose optimism and pessimism, as well as nihilism, to include in this discussion.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. We discussed it briefly before how nihilism kind of captures that whole concept of pessimism, but it doesn't exactly go into the negative. If I were to kind of like see it as like heaven, hell, and purgatory, optimism would be heaven, pessimism would be hell, and then nihilism would kind of be right in the middle, just that purgatory.
Yeah. Jess, do you have anything to add to that definition of optimism or pessimism?
Yeah, I'll just say I think the reason that it's, we're hesitant to use words like optimism and pessimism is because often ideas come into our mind when we hear those words, and we think of like positive versus negative, and it doesn't always, which we'll get into this with nihilism, it doesn't always correlate. And a pessimistic view isn't necessarily negative, an optimistic view isn't necessarily positive. So I think the definitions are important, but it's important to remember, like, there's not a fixed line. It's kind of things blur together. A lot of it is perspective.
Definitely. Appreciate that. So going over to nihilism, this definition from the Encyclopedia of Philosophy is, nihilism is the belief that all values are baseless and that nothing can be known or communicated. It is often associated with extreme pessimism and radical skepticism that condemns existence. A true nihilist would believe in nothing, have no loyalties, and no purpose other than perhaps an impulse to destroy. Also, going off of that, so there's obviously different branches of nihilism, and I'm not going to go specifically into all of them, but there's, you know, political nihilism, there's epistemological nihilism, there's so many different variations, but the one that I'm personally concerned with, and the reason that I brought up this topic, is existential nihilism.
Mm-hmm.
This is basically the idea that life is meaningless, that life is without purpose or meaning. Yeah, so I'll leave it at just that. Anything to add, Kevin?
Yeah. When I looked into it a little bit, I actually found something that said, literally translated, nihilism means nothingism, which, you know, obviously it's not really a word, but just to really help ourselves wrap our minds around it, that's just the easiest way, like nothingness, you know. And the actual definition, which I thought really just tied into what we're going to be talking about today, or we are talking about, it's essentially the belief that life is meaningless. This entails the rejection of all religious, moral, spiritual, political, and social constructs. So, like many said, there are a bunch of different types, but if you were to really boil it down to a single word or concept, it would definitely be along the lines of just nothingness, or maybe falseness or meaninglessness. Just pretty much what you see is what you get. Everything is on that surface value, and it doesn't go any deeper than that.
Yeah, awesome. Jess, anything to add to the definition of nihilism for this topic?
I'll just say that I think common misconception about nihilism is that it is, you know, when you hear life is meaningless or life has no inherent meaning, it can seem really negative at surface level, but then there's different philosophers have interpreted it in different ways, different people have interpreted it in different ways, and I think personally I've also at times thought of it as, you know, if life has no inherent meaning, then I can create my own meaning.
Yeah,
or
yeah,
those moments that feel meaningful to me, why does it have to make those moments, like, I still feel those emotions, so so why does it have to feel less meaningless just because, you know, life itself is perhaps meaningless, if that makes sense.
Sure. No, I dig that a lot. Something I was thinking about, and like an important distinction here, is to say, like, objective truth versus like personal truth, or maybe like personal meaning versus objective meaning. And I think with nihilism, it more so tries to describe that objective aspect, where it's just like, okay, objectively speaking, like, if I'm just saying, you know, fact for fact, and like nothing in terms of like an opinion or a perspective, like you were saying before, Jess, like that's what nihilism says is meaningless. But then also, like, if we have that power to say, oh well, this situation to me is going to mean a heck of a lot. You know, maybe I want it to mean a pivotal point where I'm going to go from being a pessimist to an optimist. And that in itself has an incredible amount of meaning. Or it could just be, oh, this is just like a natural change, like a reaction to the situation. And beyond that, it's nothingness. So yeah, I think it really does boil down to like what you want to get out of life. And if you only care about that factual basis, I guess, then, it's almost going to be like you don't even care about your own opinion or perspective anymore, to the degree that it allows you to create that meaning.
Yeah, exactly. Definitely. Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jess, if you wanted to respond to that.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say that's exactly what I was thinking. And I thought of, just because we were talking about different philosophers, and I was thinking of the story, the myth of Sisyphus, and how... He's he has this meaningless task assigned to him for eternity, and yet he finds enjoyment in it. I don't know. It's like, it's not explicitly stated, but I was thinking about that, and I'm like, to find meaning in the meaningless is almost a rebellion against life itself. You know, like it's a rebellion against that nothingness, to create your own meaning.
Yeah. So Jess, I'm actually really happy you brought up Sisyphus, because I noticed that being a theme throughout looking up into nihilism, and I had like no other than knowing about that. The name, I really have no basis for what Sisyphus is, so that definitely helps me get a better idea of that. But also, responding to your earlier point about nihilism not having to be negative, I have heard these things before, and so I did a little bit looking into it. So I think it's called technically, which is funny again, optimistic nihilism.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a book by David Landers who really speaks a lot about it. And I know there's a video on YouTube as well that came out and is basically pushing that same philosophy that just because life is meaningless doesn't mean you can't create your own meaning within it. So, yeah, very, very valid point. All right, moving on to the law of attraction, another thing that we're going to be talking about. So while I was looking up law of attraction, you know, I mostly found that generally from my search, it seemed that a lot of it was considered pseudoscience. In terms of the like very provable outcomes of like, can I, literally think something into existence? However, I will say that there are very good anecdotes in terms of, for instance, like mental rehearsal in preparing for training. So with Michael Phelps specifically, from Bill Bryson's book, The Body, A User's Guide for Occupants, he really talks about Michael Phelps and how he rehearses, you know, from start to finish, the entire race in his head, and he you know is really having I think they call it the tape or something like that, where he's watching himself do a perfect race, and how that plays out in real life. And there's quite a few studies you can go into, look into to mental rehearsal and things of that nature. One thing I forgot to talk about and forgot to mention before I delved into the pseudoscience versus some good, you know, anecdotes and some actual science articles is what the law of attraction actually is.
Right. I was definitely going to ask you about that.
Jess, to put you on the spot here, would you like to define the law of attraction?
I think all three of us have a good amount to say about this, and I'm actually really excited for this part.
Okay.
Yeah, me too. I think from what I've read about the law of attraction, it's this idea that you can kind of manifest your desires. So like if I want something and I really focus on that, then I'll attract things in my life. And if I'm paying attention to those signs and synchronicities, then, and I follow them, then, you know, those things will happen. And like you said, Manny, like there's not a lot of like hard science to back it up, but there are some examples which we'll probably talk about, and and I think like even outside of like humans, they've seen this happen. Like I know everyone knows about, like, you know, you talk to your plants and they grow. They've done studies where like they grow more, or I just recently learned about with motorcycles, when you're learning how to ride a motorcycle, one thing that you learn is target fixation, where basically the motorcycle will go in the direction, is more likely to go in the direction that you're looking.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I've seen that with slacklining.
Yeah. So, I think those are helpful examples to just outside of the human mind. But then inside the human mind, like we've all heard of self-fulfilling prophecy or like a self-justifying myth, which is similar. And it's just like, you know, if you believe you're going to, the law of attraction is that you, if you believe you can do something, then you're going to do it. And if you don't, then you're not going to.
Right. And I think it could be kind of that double-edged sword where like, it might be exactly what you desire and you really focus on it. And you believe that it's going to happen because you want it to happen. But I also think that focus can work against you. Like if you're really afraid of something and you really focus on like not wanting to experience it, like the more and more you obsess over it, the more and more you kind of align yourself to that thought process, the more likely it is that what you don't want to happen can actually happen.
Definitely.
And I've definitely had that unfortunately happen to me. But one thing I could think of for sure when you're saying that is just like neuroplasticity. I think is a more like less pseudoscience type way of seeing this. You know, obviously it's the ability that we have to just physically reshape our brains. And say you do kind of shrink that part of your brain that's more so associated with fear, it's going to change the way you react to certain situations, right? And then that change, that behavioral shift is actually going to not necessarily like create things to happen, but it is going to alter the way certain situations unfold because you are able to actually focus on certain things and train certain parts of your mind so that you just, you handled it in a different way, you know, and it might take a long time to get there. It might have to happen through years of meditation or, you know, just conscious focus. But, you know, we have that ability to actually change the way our brains react to our surroundings. And I think that's one of the most powerful examples of the law of attraction.
Yeah.
It's so cool. And I was learning recently that those neural pathway changes that we can control and we can change, your brain can also like become addicted to. So just like you can become addicted to a substance or even addicted to a certain line of thinking, and usually a negative line of thinking, you could also become addicted to a more positive thinking just by like more stimulation of those neural pathways. And it's so cool.
It is. And it's even cooler when you start to see like how the world around you changes as a result of that. One thing I love talking to people about, especially like when they've known about this for a while before, and I'm not like the first one that actually introduces them to it. I love hearing like their stories about like how they were first like really clearly seeing it, you know, how, and I might not be really saying it right, but this is just how I feel whenever I think about this, like how did the law of attraction like prove itself to you those first couple of times? And I love hearing those stories so much. And I mean, the one that we were just talking about you know, my brother's bassist. Yeah, JM, there you go. That's one of my favorite ones. And just, you know, silly things. Like I'm walking through the grocery store or Walmart, it's probably my favorite one. So I was walking through Walmart and I was getting my dad some dumbbells for his birthday or Christmas or something like that. Just a little gift. And I didn't think about grabbing a cart. I was just like, okay, I'm going to get dumbbells and then I'm just going to check out and go back home. So I pick up the dumbbells and obviously like this is like towards the back of the store. So I'd have to like pick up these dumbbells and then walk all the way to the front, just holding these really heavy objects. And I quickly realized that was not a good idea because I started getting distracted, like wanting to buy other things. So I was like, man, I could really use a cart right now. And then I was like, no. You know, I think I have some power over this right now. So I started like really believing as hard as I could. Okay, there's going to be a cart in the next aisle. There's going to be a cart in the next aisle. And within like 5 seconds of me really, really feeling that and believing it, you know, it was there. And just some people might see that as like a coincidence and it's not actually an example of the law of attraction. But when you see things like that happen time and time again, it's hard to call it a coincidence. It's hard to keep saying, oh, this is just a random happening, you know. And yeah, I don't know if you guys have any of those stories, I'd love to hear them, but Yeah, it's always super enjoyable for me to hear.
Yeah, Kev, I think we will, since we're definitely going to have a Law of Attraction specific only episode, we can definitely talk about that and have those combos there.
For sure, yeah.
But I did want to push us forward in time. I know we don't have a ton of it. But one more thing I did want to add about the Law of Attraction and maybe some more science as well is the Bader-Meinhof complex or phenomenon, or also known as frequency illusion. And that's basically the idea that after noticing something for the very first time, there's a tendency to notice it more often. Leading people it's a bias, right? It's a cognitive bias. So like I notice a car that I'm familiar with because my mom bought one, and now I see her car everywhere. That's
Right,
right.
right.
That's an idea. But so taking that premise and moving it on to the law of attraction, basically what I'm saying is, even if there's no scientific, absolutely perfect experiment out there that deals with the law of attraction, there's at least the understanding that we have a bias that our brains are not able to take in all of the information that's out there in the world and focus specifically on those tasks. We know that, and we have these biases. And so, basically, what I'm saying is that whatever thoughts you're having, whatever you're focusing on, those things are probably, those opportunities are probably already there in front of you. But because you have the intention and because you have those thoughts, you will begin to notice those things.
And I think that really raises that question that I think people are asked quite a bit when they say things like that, Manny, is like, okay, are you actually seeing more of it, or are you just looking for it more? And I think they both go hand in hand. I think you could say yes to both. It's not like one is out of the equation because you say yes to the other. Like, yeah, you're seeing it more, but you are seeing it more because you're more like aware, like just aware of it, or aware that it's just around. And that in itself makes you feel like, oh, well, maybe, the universe is kind of manifesting something that I'm choosing to focus on now, as opposed to the tiny amount or the non-existent amount that I was focusing on it before.
And I was thinking, just even if just like this, at first when I read about Bader-Meinhof or this, I think it's it's the illusion, I forget what it's called, but that
Frequency illusion.
frequency illusion, yeah. And I was thinking, even if it's my mind, falling into this cognitive bias, or even if it is, the law of attraction, whatever the reason be, even if I'm still feeling that, if I'm still experiencing that, I wonder sometimes, does it even matter? Like, does it matter if it's an illusion or not?
Like, what label do you want to put on it? And if there is no label, like, does the reality still stand?
So we're gonna take a super quick break, and we'll be right back with our next topic of delving into this. Yeah, so Kevin, really going off of one of the things you talked about in Law of Attraction was that the danger of it, positive. Sorry, not only the positive aspects of this, but also the negative. You talked about fear
For sure, for sure.
and manifesting that. And so, the big reason that I wanted to talk about this topic was that I found that personally I was very like having very nihilistic thoughts, and not in that optimistic way of like let me find my own meaning sort of thing, but like in a very pessimistic way. I was thinking about the world, and its pointlessness to me, and I realized that thinking was really not doing me any favors. It wasn't making life any better, and subjectively for me, or even objectively. And so what I realized that I was, when I thought about the law of attraction and where my thought patterns were, I came to a personal realization that, like, I was manifesting meaninglessness. I was looking for it. And I really thought that was, quite terrifying.
Yeah.
And something I wanted to come in and talk to people about so that, they get out of that loop.
For sure.
Because it's not a pleasant one, but,
No, not at all.
So I just wanted to talk about that.
For sure, dude. And like Jess was saying before, which I mean is perfectly said, like, you know, we have kind of the ability to choose either or. Like, you don't have to be like, oh man, I'm feeling like I'm kind of drifting into this nihilistic direction and it's not bringing me any joy. It's not bringing me any satisfaction. I'm not progressing because I truly am starting to believe, like, down in my core that everything is just meaningless and pointless. And then, yeah, you could like go into that trap and just kind of be stuck, or you could say, no, I'm going to go ahead and give it meaning because I can do that too. And then you give it meaning, you know, you start changing things and you start seeing, holy, like, wow, I could actually feel a lot of satisfaction from doing something as simple as like a run or doing a little bit of research. And before you may have looked at that and said, oh, well, this is just pointless anyways. Why am I doing it? Or, you know, with the kind of renewed mindset, you could go ahead and say, well, I learned something. I'm like kind of honing my own skills, expanding my mind, no pun intended, you know, things like that. But I think it just really comes down to what you want to get out of life, like what you want to feel, you know. And I feel like, yeah, you could get addicted to negativity just like Definitely. You can get addicted to positivity. And yeah, I say addicted very specifically because, like, normally we don't really have like a good connotation with that. Yeah, if you're addicted to something, it's kind of like at that point it's holding you as its prisoner. Like, you don't have any power over it anymore. But yeah, one thing I did get down that I wanted to mention real quick was just like with the law of attraction, now that everyone knows kind of what that's about and how we think about nihilism as believing in nothingness, it's kind of like the two combat one another. And I feel like if you believe that life is meaningless, then basically you're subjecting yourself to an experience that's like devoid of depth or substance. And when you could really see that in that law of attraction light, then that basically means like, okay, when you believe in nothingness, you are literally creating a reality around you that's more aligned with nothingness and things that just feel empty, you know. And then people start really just keep going and going and going and going. And you're like, oh yeah, I'm onto something now. Like, obviously now that I'm just seeing more of it, it's kind of like I'm receiving confirmation that it's true. And I just think the opposite is there too. And yeah, exactly. Like Jess was saying, like, you have the ability to choose that. So why are you going to choose something that just makes you feel miserable half the time or all the time?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm really happy that you said that, Manny, and you were honest about that, because I think that, you know, it's easy to say, you know, oh, like, you know, talk about the law of attraction, but because it is this positive feedback loop, then it can work the same way. And I've gone through periods like that too, where I'm just fixated on the fact that everything is meaningless, and I really struggle to find that meaning, to create that meaning. And then you keep spiraling, and you get to a point where it's kind of like you have no other option but to try to change that way of thinking or change certain things in your life, like you were saying, Kevin.
Yeah,
but it is tough, and I think a lot of people go through periods of up and down, especially if you're not, like Kevin brought up, the void of death. And I think for people who don't have, you know, it's a lot of people who are religious, I think they have this, for certain religions, they have an afterlife that they believe in, and that can bring comfort and can bring answers to the mysteries and the unknown.
For sure.
Whereas like, if you don't believe in that, or you don't know, or whatever, if you're facing that, you know, when this is over, there's just nothing, or I live and then I die and we're all dying over time and it's over. It can feel kind of like kind of scary. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe that's going on a tangent,
And I don't mean to like offend anyone here, but I feel like religion is largely used for that, like you said, to actually find those answers in a way that doesn't require very much personal effort, if that makes any sense. Like, you don't have to put the thought in yourself. You don't have to really dive deep and look around and ask yourself, like, okay, like, what would the afterlife really look like? If I were to take in every experience I've gone through, every opinion I've heard, every you know, feeling that I've felt, and I were to try and like logically wrap that up into an answer, what would I then have? And that kind of thinking can definitely drive you a little bit crazy. And if you don't have that answer and you're not willing to really think about it too thoroughly, then it's not entirely illogical to say, okay, well, I like the way this faith views it, and I'm just going to stick with that. But I think where nihilism can really, like, I guess start to mess with people in a negative way is when you start to look for those answers and you're not really resorting to any pre-established belief system or anything like that, then a lot of people say, like, the most logical answer that they run into is that of nihilism, which is just like nothingness. You know, well, of course, like, it doesn't mean anything. Like, why is it wrong to do this like despicable act? Why is it actually wrong? You know, if you really were to ask yourself that, instead of saying, oh, well, my moral compass just prohibits that, you know, or completely considers that to be unacceptable, you know. But if you were to try and dive like a little bit deeper than that, which I think a lot of people do when they kind of get into nihilism, they just find that conclusion, which is basically like, oh, well, it's nothingness, it's meaninglessness, you know. But then for me, I like to ask myself, like, why would we run into that that final decision? You know, why would we tell ourselves that is the ultimate answer when you're really just kind of running into the dead end of human comprehension? It doesn't mean that there isn't an answer. It just means, like, maybe our minds in this current physical form aren't capable of actually understanding those things. So I don't know, it just makes me feel like there isn't necessarily like a strong reason to say it is falseness and it is pointless and it is, you know, completely meaningless. I think it does go deeper. I just don't think we're necessarily equipped to go that far just yet.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up, because I was thinking that too, and how it's a biological contradiction, right? Like, the human mind is searching for answers and wants to explain everything, and we crave order, yet nature is full of disorder, and everything's constantly changing. And yeah, there's like this illusion of a dead end, and right. it's like, it could be.
It's really funny you said it like that.
What'd you say?
It's really funny you said illusion of a dead end, because that's exactly how I wrote it down.
Yeah, like this. I think you said it too, and it's like if it's not, and I mean if it is, and there is possibly meaning. It's not just nothingness, but our human mind can't understand that. I think some people have this like anxiety about that, and right. they want to believe that it's either like we will be able to explain everything in the future through technological advancements or just like human evolution. But I think it's again, like, it goes back to perspective. Like, you could view the dead end as like really cool. I was always thinking about things that we can't explain by like science, and how it's really beautiful that, to me, like, the mystery of it is beautiful. And going back to religion, I think some people they view religion like that. Like, they view the mystery of God or the mystery of life as beautiful, and they don't need to like kind of look any further. And that's how I often feel. Like, it's just so it's not a negative thing that we can't understand everything.
And I think that's a really good way to put it, because sometimes, at least for certain people, and I definitely consider myself part of that crowd, and I think the two of you would be part of that too, but like, it's almost as if the mystery, like, experiencing that mystery is the point. being able to start on this like clean slate and go any direction you want to go in and see the world however you want to see it, you know, like that is the point. And I always think about that, like what is the point of life? What's the meaning of life? You know, if you were to put that in a very like quick, in a quick answer, and trying not to like really get into it, but like I think the answer I've been like most satisfied with is just to create. And that could be interpreted in so many different ways, which is why I like it so much, because like, yeah, you could create art. You know, whether you like, you want to sculpt something or draw something, you could create a song, you'd create a conversation like the three of us are doing. Sure. You literally create your routine. The second you wake up, you create your workout. You like everything you do is an act of creation. And I mean, no matter what you believe or don't believe, you're wrapped up in that reality regardless. And I think that's just like kind of one of life's like beautiful and like humbling lessons. It's just like, dude, you're everything you do, every breath you take, like you are creating. And I think that's just such a great purpose, whether or not you want to see it in a positive way. I just think it's one of those like super eye-opening things. If you're looking for purpose and you can't find it, then you got to kind of realize like through your existence, you are creating, and that could be so meaningful if you allow it to be.
Yeah, absolutely. Sure. Yeah. So I'm going to take us into the next little topic here. You know, we can definitely continue talking some more about the negative side of, you know, that manifestation. But, you know, I wanted to end today really talking about the optimism, the positivity, and that positive feedback loop that we can create for ourselves. Any initial thoughts on that?
Yeah, for optimism in general and really how it relates to the law of attraction, I think we touched on that a good a bit, just basically saying how, you know, if you choose to use that in a way that's conducive to that more I guess, positive or optimistic mindset, the more you expose yourself to it, the more it's gonna happen, basically. The better you're gonna get at it, if you will. It's kind of like a training tool where, like, you start off and it might feel kind of weird, but the more and more and more you do it, the more it's gonna become kind of second nature. And I think that's just one of, like, the most basic and, like, simple ways that the law of attraction works. If we're not really getting into the more, like, fantastic or like spiritual or like pseudoscience approaches, it's just literally like you expose yourself to it more and you get more comfortable with it. And obviously that applies in both ways, but yeah, I think that's just like kind of a good amount of enticement for people to start fiddling around with it, you know, see what you discover, see how strongly your belief kind of molds your surroundings and your experience of life.
Kevin, I thanks for bringing that up, that piece about basically what is habit, habit formation. And you know, I definitely want to have an episode just on habit formation. But I think it's a great point you brought up, and it reminded me that, you know, one of the things I've been trying to do to keep this positive and optimistic mindset, and something that like I've finally started, which is just absurd to me. It has taken me this long, but I started a gratitudes journal.
Nice. I'm glad you did that, dude. Nice.
And, you know, I'm just, you know, every day I'm writing down three things that I'm grateful for. And there are so many things to be grateful for. It's absurd. even in these ridiculously tough times that we've experienced. But there are so many things still to be grateful for. And just having that habit means that throughout my day, I'm looking for things to be grateful for. I am enjoying things and not taking things for granted. And I think that's a really good manifestation of the law of attraction.
It absolutely is, dude.
That positivity.
I think like even something as simple as like your movements. And I mean, I don't know if you guys know about Ido Portal. But he's all into this like movement culture thing, and he has some wonderful philosophies when it comes to it. Like in general, you know, you getting up to walk to the bathroom right now, or getting up to just like open your front door, close it and lock, like every little motion that goes into that act, like kind of what I was saying before, like you create that movement, dude. And if you really like focus on it, you could do some fun things with that. And that's, that's kind of what Ito Portal is about. And he's like, yeah, you kind of like go up and down the stairs normally, but like try and spice it up a little bit, you know, like try and go up the stairs, like just on your big toe or try and like kind of crawl up the stairs or do something funky, you know, don't just make movement this boring, like task that you have to do every day. Like make it fun, you know, do something crazy with it. And I think that's just such an awesome way to view kind of the human body and allowing it to interact with the mind in all these like fun and exciting ways.
I'm so glad you said that, because when Emmanuel posed the question, my first reaction, I didn't want to say what the first thought came to my mind was, because I felt like it was kind of cliche. But then what you were saying was a much, you know, more elaborate, nice way of saying kind of like the enjoying the little things or the seemingly small things and those moments, and how they don't have to be small. Like, I don't even like that phrase, because,
No, I like that. That's definitely a good way to put it.
Yeah. And going back to what you were saying, Emmanuel, with the gratitude journal, that it's I've done it on and off for years, but it's the perfect example of the law of attraction, right? Like, you really do start to notice that your frame of mind and the way that you're looking at the world and the way that you're just approaching every day is, it does become different, and you're focusing on different things, and the habits are formed, and the neural pathways in your brain are established. And that I think is, like, you know, the evidence, the scientific evidence that's needed.
Nice. Yeah.
And just going back to what I said earlier, like, I just have been really thinking lately, you know, this idea of enjoying life as a rebellion against the nothingness. And so, like, for anyone who identifies as a nihilist, or who just like thinks, you know, gets into that line of thinking of nothing is meaningful, you don't really have anything to lose by like just trying out the new mindset.
You don't.
That's very true. And you have a heck of a lot to gain.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I did want to ask, I know we're approaching our time limit here, but yeah, the question I asked before, like, Manny and I have talked about this a lot, but I'm more curious about you, Jess. Like, what was your first, like, real super clear run-in with the law of attraction? Like, when you saw something in front of you and you were just like, okay, this is legit. This isn't just like my mind playing tricks on me or whatever.
I'll say the first one I was really aware of was, which I've actually talked to Emmanuel about this. It's a book called the Celestine Prophecy, and I read it, I'm not sure how many years ago, maybe like 8 years ago. And before I read it, I'll say that I was in this like conference, and this guy was talking about the law of attraction, and he was saying, like, you know, he was explaining different, and he was telling stories from his own life, and he talked about how he was on, I think, a bus, some form of public transportation, and he was looking at this woman, and she was looking at him, and they just kind of had this weird connection, and they didn't know each other, but he felt like he knew her, and she was familiar, and then he didn't say anything, he's like, oh, whatever, and she came up to him, and she was like, have you ever heard of this book, The Celestine Prophecy? Mm-hmm. And he was just like, really, really like taken aback, because he had recently read it, and seeing her as like familiar was reminding him of this book. And I don't want to go too deep into the book, but there's just a part of the book on like connections and energy and seeing people that, you know, you feel like you've met before, or they look familiar to you. And this, the whole premise of the book is that like nothing is a coincidence. So after that book, I heard about it. I kind of didn't forget about it, but it was in the back of my mind. And then I stumbled upon this book, and in a way that I felt was just really serendipitous. And it was just, it felt like I was meant to find it in that moment. I was meant to read it. And ever since I have read it, and in the book a lot, it talks a lot about synchronicities. And I don't think they explicitly say the law of attraction, but it's like paying attention to those signs.
Right, right.
And being, just being more in tune with where you're going. And
yeah.
Everyone I've talked to about this book has stumbled upon it in a weird way like that. And it just, like a coincidence, because it happened with myself and with so many people that I know, and like the book is kind of about that, so it just seems like too perfect to be a coincidence.
I feel that. Yeah, I feel that. Like, I was always super skeptical at first. And then when I, you know, kept talking to people about it, a bunch of different people, not just like my friends, but also like, you know, just randos out there that you kind of come across, you start having a chat with, like, you kind of bring it up, not necessarily in that way. You don't call it law of attraction or anything like that, but they still explain very, very similar things. And I'm like, okay, there's something going on here. Like, this isn't just me going crazy and like wanting to see, or like seeing what I want to see, you know? So I think it just, it becomes so like solidified in your own mind once you see so many different examples of it.
Definitely.
Yeah. One thing I will say in regards to that, Kevin and Jess, is that I am one of those people. I stumbled upon the Celestine Prophecy after, because you had told me, you had mentioned it as, you know, I talked about Kevin was the person that you reminded me of when I first met you. And you had told me about the Celestine Prophecy, you know, it being really cool. And that was literally like the only thing that I heard about it. And then I just happened, this was, I don't even know how many months later this was, but this was, you know, when we had left training and I was already up in Muchinga and going up to the prof house. And I just decided one day, I was like, hey, you know, why don't I look at the bookshelf? And I wasn't really, I really never went to the bookshelf to do anything. And the first shelf that I looked at had the Celestine Prophecy sitting on it. And the Northern House has a lot of books. And it was just a crazy synchronicity for me. Some might call it a coincidence, but again, very, very, very powerful moment there. It's a fantastic book.
Yeah. I think that's how I like initially got you super interested, Manny. And I remember this day very, very well, because we were, I think, like making pizza or something in the oven. And we were talking about things, just general things. But then, you know, this topic came up, and I think it started off with like the coincidences type of mentality. And then you were like, yeah, but I just feel like so many things can maybe be seen as like a coincidence, or that's at least what most people would call it. And then I was like, dude, man, I looked at you and I said in the most like, just, I guess, like intentional way, like if you were to take anything away from that conversation, like this is what I wanted it to be. And I was like, there is no such thing as coincidence. And I remember you just like, I don't know, your reaction was just priceless, dude. You were like, oh, okay. Like I'll give that some serious thought, you know, and that just kind of, it gave birth to so many similar conversations in the future, but yeah.
Yeah, no doubt. We will put this book in the show notes as well. The name of the book is Celestine Prophecy, and it's by James Redfield. I think they actually have, there's a another book, but what was the other thing I wanted to mention? Oh yeah, the law of big large numbers. There's a, oh man, I'm not going to remember the name of this book. I'll have to put it in post. But I'm going to find it for you. And it talks about the math of synchronicities. And it's fascinating. You should check that out too. But yeah, I think we've, you know, come up on time, Jess, just because I told you it was going to be an hour. If there is anything else you want to add to this conversation, please feel free with the time you're willing to spare.
One thing that, you don't have to include this, but it just kind of popped in my mind when we were talking about the Bader Meinhof thing and just how, and coincidences too, like how we as humans try to like explain things, and then those explanations, like even if they're back, they have like scientific evidence or experiments to back them up, there's still this element of like humans searching for an explanation. And mm-hmm. I'm not saying that like, you know, you're searching for something so you're going to find it. But sometimes I do think that like, because we have that desire, we're going to like explain things in terms that we understand them, that I don't know if this is making sense, but it's just like, it just to comfort ourselves, because I think at first it is kind of scary to think like nothing's a coincidence and like, and you know, me seeing this number again, or me seeing this thing again, you know, that's not a coincidence. That means something. It's kind of scary at first, you know, if you're not used to that way of thinking, you're like,
it's daunting for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was just thinking, like, you know, sometimes these scientific or these more realistic views can, they're justified and I get them, but they can sometimes be incomplete and inhibiting.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know why, but this kind of reminded me of like the heliocentric and geocentric model of the solar system, and how before, you know, everyone believed it was geocentric, and everyone was like, oh, well, this is just how we want to like comprehend it. Like, we don't have any like solid proof to believe this, but that's just how we feel our solar system works. And so many people believed it so firmly, but it wasn't correct, you know. Then of course heliocentric came out later, but like with that, like, I just think a coincidence, at least the word and the description, it's kind of just like our attempt at describing something that is currently just unknowable or unable to be explained. So we just say, oh, it's a coincidence.
For sure.
Yeah, I hear that. Jess, thank you so much for taking the time to be on our podcast. Great to have you here.
Yeah, it was awesome talking to you.
Thanks so much for having me. It was an honor, and I'm glad I got to meet you virtually, Kevin.
Yeah, same to you, Jess, and the pleasure was definitely ours.
Yeah, and hopefully, you know, when we do our Law of Attraction episode, and we'll probably, you know, put synchronicity in there, we can have you on for that as well. So, yeah, stay tuned. Was Jess Murphy. We might have her on in the future.
I hope we do.
If you liked her, if you liked this episode, definitely let us know. Reach out to us. And how do you do that exactly? Kevin, how do you reach out to us?
Well, we have an Instagram, which is Expansive Minds Podcast, all one word. If you look us up there, you will see our little profile.
Very nice. We have a Twitter as well. Right now it is at Minds Expansive, not Expansive Minds. I don't know why it did that to us, but I might go in and change it and see if I can. But otherwise, for now, it's Minds Expansive.
Yep. And then we have an email too, which is expansivemindspod@gmail.com. So yeah, however you want to reach out, give us feedback, questions, opinions, maybe future episode ideas, things you'd like to hear us talking about. If you want to be featured, whether it's with your music or just your ideas and your words, then we would love to talk to you. So yeah, reach out to us and we'll see what we can do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Also, we'll post the link to our link tree so you can find all of those contact points from one source. They'll be in the show notes, along with, like I said, all the sources that we talked about today, as well as some of the recommendations. And, oh, I forgot one thing.
What's that?
Actually, questions to consider for, you know, after this. You know, I know you probably got a lot to think about in terms of this. But, Kevin, do you want to talk about these questions you wanted to pose for the audience?
Yeah, so I was doing a little bit of research on all this probably, what, like a week ago, last time we had our meeting. And I was just, you know, coming across a lot of information that really had me thinking. And I did, I think, mention one or two of these questions before when we were discussing with Jess. But I'll go through and you guys go ahead and do what you will with these questions. But I think they're a lot of fun to explore. Three main questions here. So the first one is, does our inability to comprehend certain things make it logical and or reasonable to resort to a nihilistic mentality? Second is, are we calling nothingness and falseness the ultimate answers to unfathomable mysteries, or are they merely the illusions of a dead end? And third, since it's all a matter of perspective anyways, how do we choose to be affected by the admittance of certain answers being objectively unknowable? So have fun with those.
Cool, man. Yeah, so check those out. You know, just have them for thought if you like. Otherwise, you know, send us an email expanding on those questions, or a voice note, whatever it may be. Send it our way, and we'll try and feature that in the next episode.
Yeah, that'd be great. Thanks again, guys.
Thanks. See you later. music, 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 boots,
boots, boots, boots and cats, and boots and cats, 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 boots and cats,